Hi, I'm Helen Goldman, and you're listening to The Sirens of Audio.
Hey, Doctor Who? What are you talking about? G'day audiophiles, you're listening to The Sirens of Audio, the podcast that explores the universe of Doctor Who and certain other things too. In the audio medium, my name is Dwayne.
And my name is Philip. G'day audiophiles, g'day Dwayne.
How are you? How's it going there? Your hair's getting a bit longer.
Yes,
we are. No visits to the hairdresser for a while?
No, it's been 2 months of total lockdown and it's just getting worse. So we're allowed now to leave the house for 1 hour a day for exercise, and that's it. My wife works at the local hospital. She's a physio, and she had a close contact with someone last week, and so she's actually in isolation. So she's now in our bedroom and bathroom, so she's got that bit of the house to herself, and she can't come out. So delivering all her meals to her, leaving them outside the door, and yeah. So anyhow,
it's you can't come out. Reminds me of The Rescue. Yeah. Hopefully, as long as you don't have Coquillion lurking about as well.
Indeed. But I mean, New South Wales at the moment has got about 1,000 cases a day, but we do know that compared to other parts of the world, and lots of our listeners have had it much worse. And hopefully, at least we've got a vaccine, and the vaccination program is going unbelievably strong at the moment. The state government's taken over and just said, we're doing this, and it's starting to get done. So, but it looks like it could be till Christmas.
Yeah. Okay. So it's funny though, with your audio listening, are you finding you're getting more of a chance or less of an opportunity stuck doing what you're doing to catch up with all your audios?
You would think I'd have a lot more time on my hand, but the reality is I've had a lot less. A lot of my audio listening time is in the car, taking the kids to activities. So driving to and from ballet and to and from karate and to and from school and all those things, and none of those things are happening. So I've lost all that time. So I'm actually been struggling to actually keep up with everything, which is the first time in a long time that's happened. Okay. So I get my 1 hour a day out walking, which is my listening time. But also I'm doing a bit of a job for the government at the moment, trying to help them with their grants, with the whole situation at the moment. And so I've actually been working 7 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day. This is the first weekend I've had off in over a month. So yeah, it's interesting times.
And you want to spend that time making a podcast. Good on you, Philip.
I want to spend that time with you, Dwayne, talking about Big Finish and Doctor Who. What could be more fun?
Excellent. I thought we've had quite a few interviews in a row, and for regular listeners, you will have even noticed that we skipped our Randomoids episode this last month just gone because we had so many interviews in the pipeline. And thanks very much for your feedback too. It's always great to get that positive feedback, both from those who are listening via the podcast or via the YouTube channel. All our new episodes are going up to the YouTube channel as well. Some of them are on camera, some of them are not. Most of them are on camera, actually. And some of the older episodes, we're slowly putting them up on the YouTube channel as well. So make sure you head over there and subscribe. So I thought I'd take this opportunity today, Philip, to talk about some of the releases over the last few months that we have heard, because we haven't talked much about what's current. We've been talking to a lot of very interesting people in terms of the audio medium.
And a lot more to come.
Yeah, we've got some good stuff to come too. But as far as the new releases that we've had over the last couple of months, we haven't said much about those on The Sirens of Audio. So I thought I'd do that today with you. But before we do, I see a rabbit hole. Let's jump in. Meep, meep. Okay, Philip, here's a rabbit hole. Now, one of the other things that's happened since we've been able to talk a lot about current Big Finish stuff is that there's been an announcement on the TV about the TV series that Chris Chibnall and Jodie Whittaker have left. Now, I want to talk about not how I feel about that, because I've probably dropped in dribs and drabs how I feel about the current era on this very podcast in the past. So there are a lot of other podcasts out there, particularly the Aussie podcasts give it a good rap too. Our friends at the Doctor Who Show, 42 to Doomsday, is always good as well. Have you heard that episode that dropped this week?
I have. It was a great one yesterday, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so they had some interesting things to say about their feelings on the current era. Some of them echo how I feel, some don't, but it's, you know, it's interesting to get different opinions on where we're at with that. But one podcast I was having a look at on YouTube, actually, one thing I did notice was that a fan of Jodie Whittaker's was on this podcast and saying, I'm sad about Jodie Whittaker leaving, but I'm happy that now she's going to have the opportunity to go to Big Finish. And I want to ask you, Philip, how you feel about that, because I had an instant reaction to that fan saying that. What's your instant reaction to that, Philip?
I think it's very unlikely she will move to Big Finish quickly. The experience of most doctors is the fact that they need a break. They want something different. And I think that Jodie, rightly or wrongly, has copped a lot of criticism. And I think she'll want some distance from the show for a while. And I think that up until now, she's very much been part of the package with Chris Chibnall. So it didn't surprise me that they came together. It doesn't surprise me that they're leaving together. I do think that they have always been part of that package together. So I'm really not sure whether or not she'll move to Big Finish at all, partly because she's never embraced the Doctor as part of who she is. So when she got the role, she deliberately didn't want to watch any past Doctors. She didn't want to know about previous performances. She's very much just taken the script she's been given and just worked with the scripts, not wanting to know any of the history particularly or get involved with any of that. And so I suspect she's going to maintain that sort of stance when she's left. Now, that being said, it wouldn't surprise me in 10 years' time, if she wants a bit of money and they're offering her some scripts, she might come back. That's, you know, Chris Eccleston has made no bones. I mean, he's been wonderful coming back and it's been a joy listening to him. But he's made it very clear that if it weren't for the fact that COVID happened and he wanted to work and he wanted the money, he wouldn't have come back yet. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me in the future she comes back, because, you know, that's an option for her. But we'll just see what happens.
Yeah. I guess my instant reaction was, no, we can't have that. That was my instant reaction. But I think I should qualify that reaction, because I know there are friends of this podcast that and good friends of mine who absolutely love the Whittaker era, and that is absolutely fine. And I gave it a really good go, but at the end, for me, this particular era of Doctor Who was just not for me. And I've never really been so outspoken about it before, but I've never been as disconnected as I have from Doctor Who in the 54 years prior to that. We've seen some very weird Doctor Who, some strange Doctor Who, some unpopular Doctor Who, but I've never really felt as disconnected as I have with the series right now. And there are many reasons for that. I think that explains in part why my reaction was, no, we can't have Jodie Whittaker, because I'm not sure that it would be a successful line. Because one of the things I've noticed is the disappearance, like, apart from the series itself, however I feel about it, is neither here nor there. But the simple fact of, and Big Finish doesn't even rely on ratings, but the simple fact that merchandise has been almost non-existent over the last couple of years. Merchandise comes out, gets put on sale instantly, and then disappears. This is probably my biggest concern, because Big Finish doesn't rely on ratings, or it doesn't rely on a massive corporation behind it. It relies on sales, and I don't know if it would get those sales. I don't know if there would be enough interest. I think, and my first thought was, would I rush in to buy it? I usually rush in to buy everything that Big Finish does that I haven't heard before, if it's a range I haven't heard before. But I'm not sure if I would be rushing in to get it. What about you, Philip?
I do hear what you're saying. What I do know is that if anyone could write stories to make this Doctor work really well, it's Big Finish.
Yes, and that's my other point.
So I have no doubt at all that if Big Finish did get her, they could do what they did in some ways with Colin Baker. His era wasn't well written for. I think it's fair to say that. I think he's an amazing actor who didn't get good television stories particularly, And what they've done with him is just astounding. I think Sylvester too. I think all the Doctors have benefited from Big Finish and what the writers have done. So I have no doubt at all that should Jodie Whittaker come to Big Finish that they'd write well for her. What I do know is that Big Finish would, before they wrote for her or start, they wouldn't just employ her for the sake of employing her. I know that they would be carrying out all sorts of research. We do know that happens, that they do actually research anything before they come out. They have a good idea. They have a financial plan. They wouldn't just employ her because she's been a doctor. They would actually check out, will it sell? And we would never know. Okay, we would never know whether Jodie chose not to come to Big Finish. We would never know whether Big Finish chose not to employ her.
Yeah,
because they don't reveal anything like that. One of the things that the company does, which I do applaud them for, is that large amounts of the decisions they make, we don't see or hear about, which is as it should be. You know, people are prepared to write on Facebook and write all sorts of condemnation of Big Finish and why have they stopped this release? Why have they delayed this? Why have they done that? And the reality is they don't tell us, which is a good thing because it means that when they have to make hard decisions, either for popularity reasons or they're going to make hard decisions based on finances, they can just do it without having to explain themselves because they never explain themselves. So, yeah, whether Jodie comes or not, yeah, as I said, it would have to be a financial decision that she would make money. And as you said, you know, everything is showing that the financially she's just not, merchandise-wise, it's not successful. I mean, I just bought myself the new Patrick Troughton TARDIS and him in the Abominable Snowman outfits. They released 10,000. They've all sold out. They produce Jodie Whittaker figures and they don't sell. So, you know, be it for whatever reason, be it bias, be it sexism, be it who knows what the reasons are, but for whatever reason, this era has divided fandom and it's fandom that spends the money and they're not spending the money. And so whereas the BBC doesn't need to care about ratings fully, you know, they've got other ways of making money. It's not just the show will still sell overseas. It will still, you know, do things. So the BBC's been able to continue making it even though the ratings have dropped by millions recently. And any show that's been on the air for this long, is ratings are going to be a problem unless they find ways of rejuvenating it and finding ways to reach the general population. Ratings will always be an issue, but at the moment it still makes enough money in other ways to last. But Big Finish, they have to make money. And if it's not going to sell, and if it's going to divide fandom and cause huge stirs for them and huge issues, I suspect they won't touch it with a barge pole, but we will never know.
Yeah, yeah. And in time, I guess, I might be less resistant to the idea personally, from a personal level. And the simple fact is the third season hasn't come out yet, so we don't know what's going to happen at the end of that. There will be storylines in there that are opened up or wrapped up or whatever that would be incorporated and considered within Big Finish too. So that's also something to consider. I can only speak from this point in time for myself.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have not been satisfied with any story for two seasons. It's not about Jodie. I don't think Jodie's been well written. I don't think the stories have particularly worked. I don't think they've really designed a doctor that I can understand or relate to or can even explain. I can't explain Jodie's Doctor to anyone. Now, that being said, maybe this season it will all come together. I think Peter Capaldi, his third season was by far his strongest, by a mile. There were some good stories in the first couple of seasons he did, but the whole third season is pretty spot on. So I think it took a while for him to be written for as he should be, and in terms of getting the right mix of companions and storylines and arcs. So, you know, this is Jodie's third season. Maybe this will smash it out of the park, these six episodes that are coming.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah. He's hoping. He's hoping. Absolutely. All right. That's enough of that. Let's get out of the rabbit hole and we will talk about some of the more recent releases over the last couple of months that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet because we've been talking to too many other people. I thought I'd go right back to a June release to start with, Philip, and maybe have a little talk about The War Doctor. I'll throw in a trailer for that right here.
From Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, The War Doctor Begins, Volume 1.
I assumed you were here to help. That you were on our side.
Oh, sides. It always has to be about sides, doesn't it?
Doctor of War, make your choice.
We're too close to Falta now. Prepare explosives!
You try my patience.
You try mine!
What are they going to do?
What you have forced them to.
What are they going to do?
You may think you're being very clever, but what you're doing risks tearing apart the fabric of space and time. There are more things in heaven and earth, Rasmus. Or should I say, Khan and Gallifrey? I can't see how one Time Lord makes a difference.
You will find a way. The renegade, the warrior.
Open the time chamber. You want to know what is behind the wall. You will have your answer.
It doesn't look very hospitable.
Enter.
Big Finish. We love stories.
Okay, so leading up to The War Doctor, how are you feeling about this particular release with what you knew about it?
I guess in part my first reaction was probably, do we need this to hear this? Is this a story we need to hear? I did think The War Doctor... See, I was skeptical about the original War Doctor coming out with William Hurt, but in the end, that won me over.
You mean John Hurt?
Sorry. John Hurt. I was skeptical about the original John Hurt ones coming out. And in the end, they just were wonderful stories, and I'm glad those stories were told. But I guess I've learned over time, there's been lots of things that Big Finish have released, and I've been a bit skeptical about, do we really need this? Though I've learned more and more that just give up and go with it because it'll be good. So I guess I was less thinking, I'm not sure whether we need this. Certainly what won it for me was just, you know, the director, you know, the fact that, you know, Lou Jemison was directing this. Anything that she touches, I have to guess because, yeah, she's a magnificent, amazing woman and amazingly talented. So when I saw she was directing it, I was looking forward to it. So in the end, yeah, I was excited about it. What about you? Were you looking forward to it?
So you're saying you like Louise Jameson. Is that what you're saying?
Just a bit.
I was very curious, particularly that cover. That cover really intrigued me because it's kind of, if you look at Jonathan Carley and then you look at John Hurt and you merge the two together, they kind of look, the cover is almost like it's obviously John Hurt on the cover, but yeah, even the look of Jonathan Carley got me intrigued. And I really was looking forward to this. I like the fact that it ran straight off the back of Night of the Doctor, straight from the events of that, and went straight into it. Really, really solid start. Some really good character piece was that first episode. The second episode with Birok coming back, played by John Dorney. He doesn't do too much acting with Big Finish, but when he comes in, this was a good role for him. So that was really good. Yeah, so Lou Morgan's a pretty solid writer. She wrote that second one. And The Shadow Squad by Andrew Smith, really interesting. He always comes up with interesting stories. He's probably one of the most prolific writers for Big Finish at the moment, Andrew Smith.
Yeah, amazing history he has when you think about, you know, writing for the show at 18.
Yep.
You know, taking off spec. And now, yeah, his stuff is just, yeah, everything he produces is amazing. There's some good stuff coming up too in the next couple of months, I saw.
So overall, this was a fantastic release. Highly recommend this one. And let me give it to you straight now, listeners and viewers. If you think we're going to be overly negative on anything, most of the releases have been darn good. So it's very hard to be negative. Okay, let's talk about Shadow of the Scourge. We have mentioned it a couple of times. I've recommended it on a previous podcast. But you finally got round to hearing it?
No. Did I? Is this a Cyberman one?
Oh, Shadow of the Scourge. Scourge of the Cybermen. Scourge of the Cybermen.
No.
You haven't heard that one yet?
No, that is the one I have not listened to. So anything we're talking about today, I still haven't got to that one.
Okay, well, I'll talk about that then. If you have heard Terror of the Master, which came with the Masterful box set at the beginning of the year, it's in the same format as the audio novels here. So Scourge of the Cybermen is the first in the audio novels range. We've got another one coming out January next year, I think, written by Matthew Waterhouse, called Watchers. And enhanced by special effects and what I really loved about this, it's put in episodic form. So it's a six-parter and you listen to each part. So each part goes for an hour and a quarter to an hour and a half, and that's your one part episode. So it equates to 25 minutes on the TV. And John Coleshaw is just magnificent as the Third Doctor. Even Sarah Jane Smith, absolutely incredible. Of course, we've got Nicholas Briggs in here playing the Cybermen. Really interesting take on the Cybermen too. So in for some surprises, some really sort of current political, not posturing, but political themes that apply to our current time. But presented in such a way that they're not shoved down your throat, if you know what I mean. So it's done in the old Third Doctor style, that a lot of his stories were either political or had some kind of deeper spiritual message or something like that. Scourge of the Cybermen is, well, at the moment, it's in a class of its own because it's the only audio novel out there at the moment, apart from Terror of the Cybermen, but it's the first of the official audio novels range, written by Simon Gurria. Absolutely fantastic and sensational. You have got to get into it, Philip.
It's on my list. I just need time.
From Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, the Big Finish audio novels, Scourge of the Cybermen by Simon Gurria.
As she got closer to the dull red glow, she could feel the heat of it, even through her suit. Closer, and the thing became more distinct. A red square affixed to the tunnel wall at waist height. The square panel looked familiar. She looked back the way she had come, barely discernible in the gloom. Square panels marked the route at regular intervals, but they did not glow red. Each panel had a circular hole in its center. One panel had a thick cable attached. Plug sockets, said Sarah to herself. Except this one. The hole in the glowing red panel was not circular, but ragged. The paneling cracked. Something had broken it, using considerable force. The damage had caused some kind of short circuit. Now the whole panel was hot. Instinctively, Sarah backed away. Fell over something bulky. For a moment, she lay stunned on her back on the hard metal grill. Idiot. More embarrassed than bruised, she sat up. Whatever she'd fallen over moved. Startled, Sarah scampered quickly back, pressing herself against the curved tunnel wall. The thing in the dark huffed and floundered. In the warm, red glow from the panel, she couldn't quite see. She would have to get nearer. It was a man. He wore a bulky suit like hers, but without the helmet. His exposed face, red and blotchy in the light from the panel, drenched in sweat. It's all right, Sarah told him, trying to help. It's Mr. Craby, isn't it? I'm Sarah. It's going to be all right. He stared in agony at her, mouth twitching, as he struggled to respond. There's, he said, trying to point further down the tunnel into the dark. The effort was too much. It exhausted the last of his energy. His hand dropped. His mouth gave one last twitch. And as Sarah watched, he died.
All right. Now, another one that was released in July was Lady Christina. So did you enjoy Volume 1 when that was released? It's been a couple of years, hasn't it?
It has been a long time, and I really didn't think it was coming back. But, yeah, I loved the first volume.
Right.
It didn't go exactly where I expected it to go. It was nice that they introduced Sam from UNIT in the first volume.
Yep.
And, of course, he reappears now. It was great. A lot of fun. It was very... Yeah, it was just light-hearted, nice romp. Most of the science fiction elements taken out. It was just, a series of amusing tales.
I love the fact that Sharon Phillips is in there playing Lady Christina's mother in Volume 2, which was released in July, as I said. And did you get a chance to hear that?
I did. I did.
Yeah, you did hear that one.
Yes.
So there's an episode in there where I could have sworn, I think, it's the first episode, where I could have sworn that's Camille Kadoorie. Did you get that impression as well when you were listening? Because I know you don't look at cast lists or anything like that, but did you hear Camille Kadoorie's voice?
No.
You didn't?
In terms of which
Lady
character?
Lady Christina's father's girlfriend is played by Rosa Kadoorie, Camille Kadoorie's daughter.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She has got this almost the spitting image voice of her mother. It's just incredible. I thought, what's Camille Kadoorie going in there playing this young girlfriend? It was her daughter. Because I thought, that doesn't sound exactly like Camille, but so close that, it's unbelievable. You go and have a listen to it again. Oh, you'll get a shock.
I will need to. I did love the way she played that. I didn't actually look at the cast list. I loved the way that young actress played that character, because mm-hmm. her contrasting with Christina's father, the age difference was really apparent, and the way they played with each other was really good. And then she has there's a bit of tragedy in there. We won't give spoilers, but she actually played that with such maturity and depth. Mm. I was really quite surprised by. I was quite emotionally affected by her performance at one point.
And who directed that? Was it Helen?
Helen Goldwyn.
Helen Goldwyn. She actually made the comment that Rosa sounds so much like Camille, it's difficult sometimes to cast her but this series at least is far enough away from Doctor Who that you wouldn't get confused. I mean, it didn't catch you, but it certainly got me. Maybe I'll listen a bit closer to the voices.
Yeah. I obviously have not gone through that cast list at all. But there you go.
Yeah.
I've just been trying to listen to anything I possibly can in times, not had time to reflect enough.
From Big Finish Productions, Lady Christina, Series 2.
Quagga 1 to Quagga Base, are you receiving me?
Receiving you loud and clear, Jeannie.
Oh, my.
What is it?
Looks like a UFO heading straight for me.
Ah, here we are, old girl. Just in time for breakfast.
There's been whispered on the street that a few illegal bookies have been vanishing around London.
I'd have thought that was an occupational hazard.
What the hell are you doing here?
Would you have seen me if I'd phoned ahead?
With company as charming as yours, how could I refuse?
I came to help you, Dad.
Oh, help me!
I've come here to help you find the treasure.
Have you ever heard of Lady Eugenia D'Souza?
No, should I have?
She was a notorious tomb raider, made off with a lot of stolen Egyptian treasure during the Second World War.
By any chance, is she a relative of Christina's?
Her great-aunt.
If she's still alive.
Jackie McGee. Why, this is an unexpected delight.
Oh, now, if you can just calm down a second.
Oh, yeah, I'm not the one rooting around in someone else's backyard.
We're from UNIT.
Never heard of it.
I will not help you to execute my father. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever.
Hello, my sweet. Did the nasty girl burn you?
Big Finish. We love stories.
But what I love about Lady Christina as a series is this is a series that's taken a female character and turned her into a bit of a hero, a bit of an anti-hero, similar to the Doctor, but still kept all the femininity about her. And I always liked Michelle Ryan, so I'm a bit of a Michelle Ryan track. I liked The Bionic Woman when that came out. It was a failed series, but it went for about 5 or 6 episodes. So I was hoped that she would continue with that. This is a female character. Like, everything seems to be gender swapping at the moment, but this is what they should be doing instead of that, is creating these characters that have these feminine qualities that are still attractive and still strong and powerful at the same time. And that's what I love about Lady Christina, because it doesn't take away from Warren Brown's character, the UNIT character, either. So everyone's still got a good balance of roles in there. It's just absolutely fantastic. Do you have any thoughts on Does that make sense, what I just said?
Yeah, I don't understand what you're saying. I think you're, Michelle Ryan is such a strong character. So Christine is such a strong character. Michelle Ryan plays her with such strength, intelligence. And, yeah, she's able to, I guess in one sense, her gender doesn't matter. What matters is you've got this really strong character. But she uses her femininity as part of her character.
So her gender does matter.
Her gender does matter. Yeah, you're right. So, yeah, okay.
That's what I love. I love that. I love that.
But she's not playing stereotypes. Nothing in it. Her character is complex. Her relationship with her parents are complex. Her relationship with Bunny, you know, her father's current fling. She plays everything with a great deal of complexity, which is what makes her all the more strong and more believable.
Yeah, yeah. So set in Australia too. One of the stories. I love that. More stories should be set in Australia.
Oh, yeah. I guess it felt like it could have taken place anywhere. I'm not sure it felt like it had to be Australia. There's a few things that, I mean, it's like we all have widget grabbers all the time around us and we see kangaroos hopping down the streets. I do think sometimes we just, the trouble trying to set in Australia can become stereotypical. But, yeah, Western Australian minds, I guess that's believable.
It was interesting that they remote recorded the actors from Australia, the two Australians that were in that play. And the thing that really stuck out to me was when I was listening, I thought, these are really good voices. But then in the writing, you'll get some colloquialisms put in there that are assumed by English people to be how Australians speak, and it's not. But yet those Australian actors let those things slip by, didn't correct the recording. They just thought, oh, we'll just let it go anyway.
So what's the example of that, Dwayne?
I should have written it down. I can't remember. It's like, oh, Struth, oh, crikey, or something like, no one talks like that. No one talks like that.
As I was saying, I thought there was some of the stereotypes to make it look like Australia, I felt, may have been unnecessary. But who knows? Maybe people listening to us from around the world listen to us and go, gosh, do those Australians really talk like that? So
I don't know. I think the writer, Sarah Grokala, she's been to Australia too, so she knows how. And I think she says in the extras that she went to Rottnest Island because there's little creatures in that episode that are sort of like quokkas. And I thought, why are they? That's what threw me as well, because they were talking like that about these quokkas. And I thought, hang on, is this set on Rottnest Island? Because that's the only place they are in the world.
Yep.
And at least it was explained by the end of the story. It was explained. That's what I like. I like it if it confuses me and then there's an explanation at the end, I'm right with that. But it had me thinking at first, they're wrong. They're talking about quokkas, but they're in the wrong spot.
Yeah. What made me smile was James Smiley, who's the actor, the Australian actor.
Yeah.
One of the shows when I was young, I used to love was called Return to Eden, which was a mini series all about one of our main actresses. He gets thrown overboard and gets chewed up by a crocodile, but survives. And James Smiley ends up being her plastic surgeon who restores her back to a more beautiful self than she was. And she goes back for revenge and ended up becoming a TV soapy for very expensive glamour soapy for 12 months. And he plays this plastic surgeon. So just hearing his voice made me smile and remember a very silly but fun Australian soapy.
Yeah. His voice sounded better in the story than in real life, I can tell you that. I can imagine him playing a plastic surgeon. I know that for a fact. But yeah, Lady Christina, really good. I should also mention quickly Wilfredo Acosta and his music.
Yep.
Some of these spin-offs theme tunes are absolutely sensational. And I know you don't listen to them much, Philip, but if you listen carefully to the theme tune for Lady Christina, it captures that femininity, the heroism, and I love the electric guitar in it. Absolutely. But it also has a level of sexiness in it, and strength, and kudos to Wilfredo Acosta, absolutely sensational theme for this spin-off.
Indeed. And John Dorney, another great story from him.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Loved it. It was a great series. And I'm surprised it came back. I thought they were being ambitious with one box set. Hmm. The fact that it must have sold well enough to bring back a second box set was brilliant.
Yeah.
So, well done, Big Finish.
I'm very happy. I hope they bring back more. I hope this was good too. Okay, let's have a look at the next one. Now, I haven't heard the Sherlock Holmes release, which was heavily publicised a few months back. And it was publicised so well that I went and bought it in advance. I pre-ordered the next couple. The Seamstress of Peckham Rye. I haven't heard that yet, but have you heard that one, Philip?
I have. It is wonderful.
Right.
So I do... Now when I hear the voice of Shakespeare, I actually hear Nicholas Briggs. For me, he is the voice of Sherlock Holmes. I say as a Shakespeare, didn't I? Don't know
you
why
did
it's
say
the best.
Shakespeare.
Ignore that. Sherlock Holmes. When I Don't mind me. When I hear Sherlock
to Briggs
Holmes,
or not to Briggs?
Yeah, he's just become to me the voice. The Simpsons of Peckham Rye is three stories all interlinked, though they have a couple of different mysteries going on within them, which really keeps you engaged. I love the language. I think part of the joy of this is just the beauty of that early Victorian or late Victorian era, the English speech, the received pronunciation, or the Cockney slang. It is stereotyped, a bit like Australia. There's certain moments and there's certain language and words that are being used just to keep triggering you there. But it's just it's a great yarn. Really well acted, different stories going on between Holmes and Watson, and Watson's on another ghost. Yeah, he's women. It's just amazing, but really well played and a great adventure.
Speaking of past history, Cicero came out not long after that. I haven't had a chance to hear that yet. I haven't heard you tell me you've heard Cicero either.
I haven't. I haven't got to it.
I really enjoyed the first series, so I'm looking forward to series two very much because as far as the Big Finish originals go, they were all fantastic. Cicero was no exception. So I'm glad this has got another one too.
Yep.
Let's move on to... I want to give a little shout out to an audiobook, which we don't talk about the audiobooks much, but... I think we can announce it now, can't we? The reader of this one is going to be our guest on the next episode of The Sirens of Audio. The Paluma Project was released in July, read by Sally Navette, and we're very happy that we're going to be able to have a chat with her. We spoke with her before this was released, so she was a little bit nervous about how it would be received, but written by Tim Gambrell. It's not an audio novel, so they haven't enhanced it as much. It's just pretty much a straight audiobook reading. But I think Sally did a fantastic job at this. Tim Gambrell did a great job at the story. It's engaging, kept me going all the way through. But you've got to treat it like a book. It's not an audio that you can digest within a couple of hours. This is something that you've got to commit to listening to over a week or two. An hour or two at a time. So. Paluma Project, I can hardly recommend that one. You've heard a bit of that, haven't you?
No, I've heard all of it. Part of the reason I'm behind with my listening is because I listen to all of this, and often I try and get back to them later. I do skip some of the novels because they just take such a long time. But because we'd spoken to Sally, she talked about this, I told her I'd listen to it. So when it came out, I kept my word, and I've actually written back to her, and yeah, she wanted to know what I thought about it. So I've given her feedback about it, and a few things I've said to her about different things and what I enjoyed about her performance. So, yeah, that's part of the reason I'm running so far behind at the moment is for listening to that, but it was certainly worth it. And looking forward to you all hearing our interview with Sally next week.
And Tim Gambrell did a really good job with the characterisation of the Blake 7 crew. Really, really good. Really good stuff. I'm keen to hear more from Tim Gambrell. He writes for Candy Jar, writes a lot for Candy Jar and the Lethbridge Stewart series over there. So, good on you, Tim. Good stuff. All right, let's go back. I want to jump back and talk about a release that I forgot about from last month. And that's Dalek Universe 2. The second Dalek Universe was released. Remember how I was talking about the first Dalek Universe and how that brought David Tennant back to me? I was very, very happy with that release.
Yep.
I've seen certain criticisms about Dalek Universe in that it's called Dalek Universe, but there aren't that many Daleks in it. Have you noticed that?
I think they misunderstand what the Dalek Universe is. Because you understand what the title means, then you don't necessarily expect there to be lots of Daleks.
Yeah.
So you want me to say more than that?
Yeah, please. Please.
So what the series has tried to capture is the universe that Terry Nation created with his Dalek world. So it's particularly focused around the sort of time of the Dalek Master Plan. And so what the episodes are trying to capture is that spirit of Terry Nation. And so you have a lot of the same sort of concepts and themes that Terry Nation puts into his shows, and particularly based around the Dalek Master Plan. It's sort of very much where the Anya Kingdom comes from. So it's, you know, her aunt and uncle are from the Dalek Master Plan. So her aunt was Sarah Kingdom and her uncle was Brett Vion. She doesn't know what happened to them really. And I don't think it starts to come up in Dalek Universe 2, but I don't think the Doctor tells her yet.
He does at the end of the final story.
Does he? So she does know now. Sure. Okay. Because he was sort of keeping hidden from her how he knew them and how well he knew them.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one of the themes of this running through the first two box sets. So a lot of the themes behind the mechanoids and other bits and pieces are just Terry Nation-esque. And it's just supposed to have that sort of flow of what Terry Nation's happening. And, of course, it's part of the Dalek Universe because that's where the Doctor's been flung back before the Time War into that time with something going wrong and him needing to try and fix that so he can actually return back to his proper time stream. So, yeah, it's an interesting concept. And just for goodness sake, just sit back and enjoy the stories. That doesn't matter that much.
Exactly. And it's easy for me to like stories with Dalek on and without many Daleks because I'm not a huge fan of the Daleks. So that suits me just fine. The second box set, what were your thoughts on that? Three very interesting stories there.
It was. I think I tweeted about the fact I hate John Dorney because of what he did in his story. I was very disappointed by. So it's a great story, but there's something that happens in the second story which I was very upset about and didn't see coming, and I'm still annoyed by. But nevertheless, that's what happens sometimes when you're telling good stories. But yeah, on the whole, I think the theme works really well together. They're very distinct, different stories. But yeah, I enjoyed them. What about you?
I'll cut this bit out, but what is it that you're upset about? Was it...
Yes! Yes!
I hated that. Oh!
I was
I'm
going to so
go
annoyed.
And I'm going to say that without spoiling it.
Yeah.
All right. You know what, Philip? I think you and I are on the same wavelength. When John Dorney did what he did in that second story, I was totally devastated because I was really getting used to certain aspects of this universe, and he went and blew it all up for me. Yes. Thanks, John.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed every single story for different reasons. Roy Gill's a really good writer, actually. Everything that he writes is quite good. So Cycle of Destruction was like a origin story for Mark 7, and we found out a lot more about Mark 7, who he was, which was fascinating. There's a character in there called Mariah 6, played by Nina Toussaint-White. And I really love Maria Toussaint-White. Anything she does, I think I would love. I've loved her from the second I saw her in Let's Kill Hitler. So if there was nothing else in that story, I would love it just for her, except there is a lot more in that story too. It's really, really good. The Trojan Dalek, the second one, John Dorney. Of course, he always puts these horrible things in there, but makes it such a compelling story that you just can't look away. And Robert Valentine has a go at this one too in The Lost, which is a slightly different style story for the whole set. Really, really good stuff. And I still love David Tennant. Yeah, winner.
That's good. It's a good thing you still like the most popular Doctor probably that's existed in the last 20 years.
No, there's some people find him a little bit grating, and there's certain points during his television run that are a little bit grating, but that's all right. You just have a break from it and go back to it. Yeah. Or listen to Dalek Universe. He's perfect in this. I love it.
Yeah, isn't it? We talked
the 10th earlier. Doctor without the TARDIS is just great.
From Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, The 10th Doctor Adventures. Dalek Universe, 2.
Shuttle instruments say this is Jansen's world, not much else.
Visitor protocol initiated. For your safety and comfort, please proceed inside.
And you're pretty advanced already, aren't you, Mariah 6? So advanced, I reckon I've met your brother.
There are other androids here, Doctor. Dozens of them.
Oh, don't believe this! Let me out!
We heard someone shout. What's going on?
There's a body on that trolley, Doctor.
What's happening?
Something's wrong. Please!
What's happening to you?
I'm not sure.
The Daleks have devastated Earth, the solar system, the galaxy, countless worlds.
Who's got this many dead Khalids?
The Thals.
We have an expert witness, someone who claims to be very familiar with Daleks.
Or you will be exterminated.
I wouldn't try threatening me, Major. People do that an awful lot, and it never ends well.
Aim your weapons. If he tries to flee, shoot.
Kiss this machine goodbye.
Go! No!
Mine was lost.
Now that's not a folly, is it?
That is what we call in the architectural trade a palace.
Well, Anya Kingdom, have you decided?
No time to weigh up the pros and cons. Hold on tight.
No, I hope you know what you're doing.
Yeah, you and me, but...
Big Finish. We love stories.
Oh, yeah, I think we talked about the Doctor earlier in terms of public perception and popularity. And even though fans may whinge about David Tennant, about him being grating and things, and I think that's become a more recent revision history of David Tennant, you can't argue that the people at the time and the millions and millions, he's what turned the show around. I mean, Chris Eccleston's got the show going, gave it credibility. But it hit stardom because of David Tennant.
Yeah.
And the show, you know, hasn't hit those heights again. And it makes it very hard for everyone to follow. I think Matt Smithy's first season and a half was probably up there as well. But, yeah, David Tennant, as far as the public are concerned, he is Tom Baker, David Tennant, that's the Doctor. And, you know, us fans, we know that there's other performances which we may prefer a lot more and other actors. But, yeah, as far as the general public is concerned, it really is just David Tennant, Tom Baker. For history, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on to another release from July, and that is a couple of early adventures came out. The first one was After the Daleks. So, very interesting. We were talking about the War Doctor earlier on and how that took place immediately running on from Night of the Doctor. Well, After the Daleks takes place, well, you get that final scene with the TARDIS taking off right at the beginning from Dalek Invasion of Earth. And then it immediately goes on from there. So I thought that was a fascinating take. Roland Moore's written this one again. And we have a look at Susan and her life and how she's adjusting to life after leaving the Doctor. What was your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I loved this. I wasn't sure what to expect. It's a Doctorless, early Doctor Who companions, but it needed to be Doctorless. I guess for a long time, we've often looked at how dreadful it was, the Doctor just locking Susan out of the TARDIS and leaving. And he was doing it because he believed it was for her own good. But we didn't know that. And it still seemed like a pretty monstrous thing to do. So it was good for Susan to have an opportunity to decide, yes, this is what she wanted. And I guess this story in part gives her character the power to have decided for herself. Because, you know, having lost, in some ways, having been stripped of that power in the TV series, this has given the character a chance to choose what she wanted to do. But it's more than that. It's kind of Survivors. And I'm not sure whether I'm a huge fan of the Survivor series. This is almost like an episode of Survivors because it's the aftermath of a huge devastation. How do people react? It's all about people and how people do politics, how people want power, how will government happen in a world caught up by despair? So that was one of the things I really enjoyed. I loved that interplay of the characters and what's going to happen to the society and will society survive after such massive destruction. And even though Susan's an idea of the future because she's been there, her trying to work out what role she should or shouldn't play in that was a nice... There's all these lovely little ethical things that we could actually discuss for hours, I think, this story. Mm. There's lots of stuff I'd love to... maybe off air, spoilers, we can talk about. Just one thing about the sound design that I really loved. I had my headphones in for this, trying to get catch up to do that. I actually listened to this, half of this in bed last night after I went to bed with my headphones in. And the sound mixture design is pretty fascinating. It sounds like the studio sound of the 1960s. So I was actually listening to the sound design. You know, the Dalek Invasion of Earth. I'm not sure where this filmed, where it was filmed, which studios it was filmed in. I think it was probably Studio 6. But it was one of the times I moved to one of those big television studios. It has a bit of an echoey sound to it. So a lot of the Dalek Invasion of Earth has the sound design is a bit echoey because of the studio they were in. It's got the same sound design in this. So as they're walking through caves, as they're in the Dalek spaceship, even as they're in buildings, they've still got this slight tingy, big studio sound about it, which I'm assuming must be deliberate, but I've never heard it done before. So it actually sounds like it's been filmed in a large studio. Did you notice that? Or is it just me?
No, I didn't notice specifically what you're saying, but I'm just looking at who the... As soon as you said sound design, I always go, oh, who was it? Who was it? Was it Howard Carter? Was it... But it definitely didn't have a Howard Carter sound. Sound design was Toby Robinson. So Toby is interesting because he owns the Moat Studios, doesn't he? So I think, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's the owner of Moat Studios and he's the one that makes the lunches, isn't he?
So who did you say it was?
Toby Robinson.
No, sound design was by Toby. Oh,
I can't say the full name. Toby
Rishik.
I think he used to go by just Toby Robinson. Yeah, so it was recorded at the Moat Studio. So yeah,
is that the Toby they talk about doing all the lunches?
Yes.
I don't think I'd ever made that connection before. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So not only is he a sound designer, he's a sound engineer. So from what you're saying is he's paid an awful lot of attention to that particular era and really gone hard to get it sounding as authentic as possible. And, yeah, thumbs up to you, Toby. Great job and great lunches. It was 2019 when they made it, so they would have had a lunch that day.
Yeah, anyhow, I loved it. I thought it was a great. And you enjoyed it too?
Yeah, I did. I really did. I thought, how's this going to work with, you know, this Carol Ann Ford playing a teenager who's just gone off with David, played by Sean Biggerstaff, who he does a great job in this. So I think it's one of those cases where you might have to suspend your disbelief a little bit as far as being a teenager goes, but it's not too much of a stretch, honestly. It's not too much of a stretch. You can do it. If we can suspend our disbelief to watch The Web Planet, we can do anything.
Yeah, and she's a teenager in human years. In Gallifreyan years, she's probably 100 or 120.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Anyway, and I thought it was really interesting the way that Roland took the story, in as much as when in the Dalek Invasion of Earth, you see her just take David Campbell's hand and the TARDIS disappears. You assume they're going to run off and live happily ever after. And here she is throughout this whole story having this conflict as to whether she will go off with David or not. You know, it's not a foregone conclusion that she's going to actually end up with David.
Well, it's partly her trying to understand what love is, because she doesn't know what love is. She's Gallifreyan, she's met with a human. Mm. Can she really know what love is?
Yeah.
So there's really so much in this story we could pull apart and talk about in terms of the ethical dilemmas, the emotional dilemmas, just the storyline. They brought Jenny back, which was love to have Jenny as a character.
Oh, yes, and played by the actress who played Jenny. It was her daughter in real life.
Yeah. Lucy Bryars. Yes,
Lucy Bryars is the daughter of the actress who played the original Jenny.
I didn't know that, but there you go. Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, so that's fantastic to have that too. Great for Carol Ann Ford and Lucy to have that connection. On a personal level too. I think it's just marvellous, brilliant. I love the early adventures. I can't get enough of them.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And Lisa Bowman, she's always top class with these. She's just spot on.
From Big Finish Productions.
I cannot move. Assist. Contact lost with Dalek Control. Assist.
Doctor Who, the early adventures. After the Daleks.
Her grandfather, Ian, and Barbara had gone, leaving her behind on a ruined Earth.
The country is on its knees. People are starving, bewildered, drifting.
He's not moving. He's already dead.
For without the Daleks, I thought this world would be a better place.
Susan, come on!
The capture of David Campbell and his friend Jenny Chapman is of utmost priority. If you see these people, do not approach. They are enemies of the state, and you must inform the authorities.
Susan Foreman is an alien. And we know what the aliens who came here before did to our world, don't we?
What are you doing?
I demand she's taken away for execution. You will obey me.
Cease.
Now, how much do you want to live?
Big Finish. We love stories.
All right, shall we move on to another one?
Another early adventure, why not?
Let's have a talk about The Secrets of Det Sen, which is a prequel to The Abominable Snowmen, which, you know, as Doctor Who fans, we know that the Doctor is returning the Holy Gunter to the monastery at Det Sen. So we know at the end of this story he's going to end up with the Gunter somehow. But there is a fascinating story around it. And I absolutely adored this story. This was my favourite story of the month. Of July, I would have to say. And I'm just going to go...
Tell me why. What appealed to you?
You know how people sometimes complain about Doctor Who being too political? It goes both ways. And Doctor Who's such a broad canvas, it depends on who's writing the thing. Now, the guy who wrote this, Andy Frankham Allen, hasn't written much... For Big Finish, I don't know if he's written anything else other than this for Big Finish, but he's written a lot for Candy Jar. He writes a lot of Lethbridge Stewart. So he's written for Yeti before. He's written for characters created by the Haysman and Lincoln estate. So whether that had something to do with him writing this, I don't know. But in terms of the political side of things, you know, there are some times when the Doctor is very dismissive of things like religion. But I love it in this. He's not dismissive of religion in the slightest. In fact, if anything, he tries to talk to his, I think it might be Dodo, who talks to Dodo about accepting religions and looking a bit closer into it because there might be something into it that we can learn from. And I absolutely love this aspect of this story because sometimes, you know, when the Doctor's all, oh, science is the only way and whatever, it's a bit unbalanced, but this kind of story brings it right back for me, and I loved it. I'm going to put in a couple of clips from that story. I won't do a trailer for it, but I'll put in the clips that I'm talking about right here, just so you get an example of what I'm talking about.
And so you see, my boy, life is the greatest teacher. It shows us our differences, which we must all learn to embrace.
Quite so. I would be more interested in learning something of your own people, Doctor.
My own people?
Why, indeed, Doctor. There is something in your aspect that I have not seen before. And I have encountered many travellers from lands beyond Tibet. And none have been quite like you.
That is certainly true, Odiana. Yes, my boy. You are quite insightful. Quite insightful indeed.
Did I see you talking to that Odienar bloke?
Yes, indeed. We were talking about the beliefs of his people.
I didn't realise you were that interested in the religion here.
Oh, my dear child. How little you know of me after all this time together. The beliefs of my own people are not too dissimilar to that of Tibet.
Oh, Doctor, really? It's just superstition, isn't it?
Dodo, only a closed mind would dismiss another person's beliefs. It might surprise you to know that the teachings of Tibet have a great foundation in the basic scientific principles of the universe. They may not have the words for it yet, but they see many of the great truths of the universe. Don't look at me like I'm mad, child.
But really, Doctor... Truths of the universe.
Let me give you an example. One of the basic discoveries of Buddha Shakyamuni upon enlightenment was the understanding that everything is interconnected. Every being, every planet, the wind, everything. Even by your time, quantum physics has discovered the law of vibration, has it not?
I'm not really sure.
Well, the law of vibration tells us that everything in the universe is energy, that everything is connected.
But it does.
It does. It is one of the most basic laws of the universe. Everything moves. Nothing rests. We live in a sea of motion. Everything is an expression of the same thing. And that, my child, is what the people of Tibet call karma. Everything affects everything else. Cause and effect. You see, Dodo, it's all science. Religion, magic, just science. One simply has yet to understand.
That does kind of make sense. I mean, if any of these people visited my time...
Yes, exactly, my child. Do not judge another culture by your own. We have all much to learn from one another. Is that not why we travel?
I thought it was because you can't control the TARDIS.
No, my child.
So that's what I love about this story, and I love the slow kind of black and white pace of the story as well. The fact that it's a pure historical, although the cover would make you think that there are Yeti in it, but it is a pure historical, and I love that aspect of it too. So that's probably the number one thing I loved about this, and the sound design. They've got the Asian Tibetan sounds all going there with the monks chanting. It all sounds really mysterious and sort of creepy in a way. I just love it. I love it.
Mm. So, yeah, I think it's a brilliant job. I just had a bit of a flick through in terms of the author. It seems like he does work for he looks after the Hausman estate. Hausman estate. So, because there's some third, I just looked at some third Doctor adventures and things, and it mentions him in terms of their estate. Yeah, he does a great job. I think Dodo is really nicely introduced again. So I think it's the first time we've managed to get her. You know, they recast Dodo, and the episode's actually dedicated to the memory of
Jackie Lane. That was a nice touch.
Jackie Lane, who's just passed away a couple of weeks ago. So that was a lovely touch that they did. Once again, I think Lisa Bowman just has such a sensitivity over these early Doctors and their companions. I mean, Peter Purvis is just astounding as always.
Is incredible.
It's the first time I thought Stephen was starting to sound a bit old, but they sort of wrote in terms of he has sickness, being up high. Forget what the term
altitude
is.
Altitude sickness.
Altitude sickness. And so I felt like they kind of wrote an excuse for why he was sounding slightly hoarse and older.
Yeah.
Because Peter Purvis, I think this is the first time I've noticed he started to sound a bit old. But his doctor is impeccable. And, yeah. When William Hartnell seems to be speaking, it is just the first Doctor just has such an authority with him that Peter Purvis gives him. So the interplay between the characters was just wonderful.
Yeah, both he and Fraser Hines, when they do their first and second Doctors, they're just
great.
They're amazing. Yeah. I can't wait to see what they do next year. I don't know whether they're recasting, but for the second Doctor. But really looking forward to these earlier adventures from these Doctors that we don't sort of hear so much from these days.
No, and even though it's a prequel to The Abominable Snowman, it's not in terms of a prequel in terms of great intelligence at all. It just is the location prequel.
And it's just about the Gunter, that's all.
And some Nyabuntafa you meet too.
Padmasambhava.
Padmasambhava. Say it again, shall we?
What is
it?
Padmasambhava.
Padmasambhava, who of course is alive in The Abominable Snowman, who the Doctor has met 100 years earlier. This is when he first met him.
Yeah.
So, and they do actually talk about the mystical plane, which we know is how he made contact with the great intelligence. So there is a setup.
Yes.
What's going to happen in The Abominable Snowman.
Yes.
But it's not really, aside from those sort of things, it's just pure historical.
Oh, and yeah, I love and it. Not
nothing like
them.
Nothing like historical, which is really, can be so engaging.
Yeah. No, so that's my pick. For the month of July, that's my favourite. Let's talk about the Ninth Doctor adventures, because we haven't really spoken about them since even Volume 1 came out. But Respond to All Calls was the second box that came out, featuring Chris Freckleston as the Ninth Doctor, with three great stories by Lisa McMullen, Tim Foley, and Timothy X. Atack. And a very, very different kind of set to the first one in terms of story. But in terms of the character of the Ninth Doctor, Christopher Eccleston is just bang on once again.
Yeah, I am so impressed by how Chris has so found the voice. And it's the writers too. But it is so much the voice of the Ninth Doctor. It's just hitting every time. And the way he phrases things, his comebacks, the witticisms. But yeah, it's the timing is just perfect. So can I say a few more? You want to just chat
yeah,
a bit?
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, so what I really appreciate about what Big Finish do is they don't just try and reproduce the TV series, which is because I listened to a bit of Twitter debate and a few people talking. And I think people just want to hear a reproduction of the Ninth Doctor era with the Christopher Eccleston ones. And they made a very definite decision with the first box set to have it there weren't three stories. There was one giant story interlinked backwards and forwards, very Nick Briggs with his terms of his style in terms of playing backwards and forwards with his history. And it was something that you really could only do in audio and something that wasn't attempted during the Ninth Doctor era. It was, you know, wasn't set on Earth or connected to Earth like all these stories were. It played around with time a lot more. I guess Father's Day did a bit, but it was a very deliberate choice to not be like the TV series, to give you something which audio can do so well and Big Finish can do so well. And once again, in this box, I think the three stories, so it's much more back to more traditional TV shows. And the first story is certainly the most like a TV show. It could be filmed quite easily. But once again, Big Finish is putting that audio spin on it, so that because Big Finish is an audio company that tells audio stories, you actually want stories that are told for audio format, not for television format. And I think sometimes, as I said, I've seen some criticism in terms of people just want to be able to put a microphone up to a TV set and record it. Well, that's not what Big Finish does. It plays around with the medium. And as each story progresses in this box set, it gets further and further away from what could or you'd want done on a TV show. And I think it's successful because of that. So is it exactly like what you'd see on TV? No. But I think that's why it works. So I think it's a deliberate choice that Big Finish has made, and I'm enjoying it. What do you think?
Oh, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. The standout story for me was Girl Deconstructed, the very first one by Lisa McMullen. She's a very solid writer for Big Finish, and this one just did not disappoint. And yeah, I hear what you're saying about in terms of being made for audio, particularly the second one. I love the second one because it involves music to a certain degree, and being a music person myself, I always love it when things like that are incorporated into the stories. Also, you know, it harkens right back to other stories, like early stories like Whispers of Terror, where that were only made to suit the audio medium as well, although this 20 years have passed since Whispers of Terror, so they can do a story like this much better than they did back then. And Timothy Atack, ex-Atack, once again, every story that he hasn't done too much in the Big Finish range, but everything I have done have seen of his is really, really good. So it's Eccleston himself, he's just so spot on. It's just unbelievable. We haven't had this in Big Finish since the very beginning, where we had a doctor who had only been away from the role for 10 years or so. How long has he been away from the role? 15 years, isn't it?
15 years.
Yeah, so 14 by the time he was recording it. Sylvester McCoy had been away from the role for about 10 years when he started with Big Finish. So he had a lesser gap than Chris Eccleston. But Sylvester McCoy still sounds the same. And so does Christopher Eccleston. So with some of the other doctors, there's been a little bit of vocal change. Colin Baker was, you can hear his evolution of change throughout the years too. But Eccleston is just like going back there and seeing that character. And I don't want to see the same stories that I saw on TV. I was one of the ones that was really disappointed when Eccleston announced he was leaving after the first season. I wanted to see where he was going to go, and finally we get to do that through these box sets. Really good stuff.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think, right, I think Go Deconstructed is certainly the most traditional, and I loved it, and there's a lot of emotion in that. I do think Planet at the End, the Timothy X Attack one, was bizarre. But the more I listened, the more engaged I was by it, but you really had to concentrate on it.
I want to give it another listen because I think my concentration wavered a little bit and it lost me at certain points. So while I can hear how good it was, I think I need to give it another go.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, Sylvester McCoy's series, you know, his last two series, they tried to put a quirky show in every time, and that's this is the quirky one on that box set. And it really is quite quirky. I guess one of the things, it felt like you could kind of introduce to three excellent companions in each of the stories, and you kind of thought, oh, I hope that person goes and travels with him, and they don't. And I guess they can't. I guess they're waiting for Rose to happen, which is why none of these stories, he can actually gain a companion before he gets to Rose. But they really are writing some wonderful could-be companions in these stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Howard Carter does the music, sound design, Ian Meadows, very solid. And when Helen Goldwyn was on the Sirens of Audio before you came along, Philip, I had Helen on, and she was hinting to me at the time that she was doing something that she was so excited about for the following year. And I reckon this is what she was talking about. She was really excited about this. And I think she's done a great job. She has a different sensibility to Nick Briggs. So the production sounds a little bit different and it's refreshing. It's good. She's great as a director.
Well, these three and the Christina ones have all been directed by her, and mm-hmm. she's done an amazing job with all six stories.
Yep, absolutely.
From Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, The Ninth Doctor Adventures, Volume 2.
Excuse me.
Hello.
We do have a tradesman's entrance.
I thought I'd try the front door for once.
It's echoing.
Not quite. It's drawn to sound, then pulls it along in its wake. Stay absolutely still. And that's our cue. Run!
Can I see your identification?
Absolutely. There you go. Who am I?
Detective Superintendent John Smith.
Yes, I am. Hello, hello, hello. What's all this then?
You're a hotel inspector, but I thought...
I can't argue with the paperwork. Every town has a house like this. A house that children whisper about around campfires. A house that people hurry past. A haunted house.
I don't know who that am. I don't know who that am.
You worried whatever happened to the Andersons is going to happen to you?
Who are the Andersons?
I don't know what happened to them.
These are the minutes of the dead.
I feel...
What do you feel?
Scared. In a way I haven't felt since a very long time.
It arrives. As forecast, the resurgence.
It arrives. Has the incursant named itself?
The Doctor.
Repeat that immediately.
The Doctor.
Something's coming. Something terrifying. Something terrifying.
Big Finish. We love stories.
Okay, Philip. So I said that Secrets of Debt's End was probably my favourite release for the month of July. But in August, we had Volume 6 of The War Master released. That was called Killing Time. And I think out of all the ones we're talking about today, this is the one that affected me the most. An absolutely riveting box set. Four stories in it. Derek Jacobi, of course, is worth the price of admission alone. But we see two stories in there featuring two different companions. Katie Manning is Jo Jones, so she's playing the older. And Nyssa is in there as well. So I think the standout for this for me would have to be A Quiet Night In by Lou Morgan. Now, this one, I'm almost getting goosebumps just thinking about it, Philip. Because if we want to talk about the setup, it's all about the Master basically wanting to get control of a planet, and he's sort of playing a long game. And to be able to get access to that planet, he's using certain elements. Well, let's just say it. He's using a virus to be able to gain access to the planet. So something that was, see, this box set was held back because it was due to be released during the pandemic, and I can see why they actually held it back. So that's basically the story of the Master trying to get control of this planet. But once we get the first story out of the way, which was written by James Goss, which was good, very politically.
Well, story one and story four are really the same continuing story.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and you've got the two stories in the middle featuring the companions. So we get to the point at the end of the first story, and the Master goes off to manipulate certain events so that it helps him with other events back on this planet that he wants to control. So A Quiet Night In, this would have to be, I've seen it written on tweets and reviews and things like that, but Katie Manning's finest performance as Joe, and I would have to wholeheartedly agree. This was just something that she says in the extras almost brought it, or did bring it to tears, but it did me as well. What about you, Philip?
Yeah, it's certainly, I think, yeah, the whole box is astounding. As you said, it was due to be released. It was written before the pandemic hit. It was due to be released during the middle of when we just didn't know what was happening with the world before there was a vaccine. England was just being devastated by so many deaths, and I can understand why they couldn't possibly release it. So they hurriedly put another box set together, which they still didn't conclude because that had a big cliffhanger ending to that box set, which we don't know what's happened yet. So you can understand why it was held back, because James Goss in episode one, episode four, really shows what can happen to a society when overpowered by a virus. And so it's a political thought. It's not James Goss at all, because it's not funny. It really is quite humorless, which James is often very funny. He often has a black sense of humor, but it doesn't really come across at all this time. It's those two episodes just charting the rise and fall of political power and the Master manipulating people. It's very House of Cards, you know, Francis Urquhart, sort of Michael Dobbs sort of stuff. So very enjoyable, those two episodes. But certainly you buy this for episode two and three, without a doubt, for Katie Manning and for Sarah Sutton. In terms of the 19 with Katie Manning, I do think it probably is her best ever performance. Joe Grant is a lovely character, and at the time when I think she was on, people felt she was a bit of a screamer and didn't do much. And when you look back at her era on TV, you see that Katie Manning and Joe Grant actually is quite integral to all sorts of things. She rescues the Doctor several times. She works out plot. She's actually a very strong character, but written in the 70s as a female. And so it didn't have the same sort of agency that you'd write today for, hopefully, for a female character. So in some ways, you know, Katie Manning is an exceptional actress who just, you know, it's not a part that overly stretched her. And, you know, of course, the Third Doctor box that doesn't overly stretch her either. And the Companion Chronicles, she's still playing that character. Here we have a mature Jo. So it's, you know, she's married. She has her kids. It's the post-Sarah Jane Jo. And Katie Manning has to act her socks off. And what the Master puts the character through is traumatic. And I was furious. And I said, it's interesting because I love Derek. I mean, Derek Jacobi is the most stunning actor. I've seen him in a couple of productions live. One of my favorite films he stars in. So he's just an amazing actor. And as the Master, he's so charming. And even though you hate him, and in all the pre-box sets, even though he's bad, you still sort of root for him. But this is the first time I found
it
myself.
Almost, yeah, it was.
I hate
pretty
him.
Bad.
I've never been turned against the Master like I was with these two stories. I mean, the box is called Killing Time because, you know, it's while, what does the Master do while he's got time in his hands waiting for, you know, his plans to, you know, his long game to come to play? He's time to kill. And how does he spend his time killing time? He goes to torment two of the Doctor's companions. And here they are without the Doctor, and he doesn't arrive to save them. So what happens when the Doctor doesn't arrive? And that's what we see in these two episodes. So it is pretty bleak and pretty awful. Both Katie Manning and Sarah Sutton, I think they both give their best performances because they're confronted by the Master without the Doctor, and really they can't win because, you know, the Master gets defeated by the Doctor, but no one else defeats him. And so they were really basically lost before the start. So, you know, no spoilers, no talk about what happens at the end. But if you want to see two of the Doctor's companions really put under the thumb, and it's the first time I've not wanted or been amused by the Master winning. It has just been, he's evil. And, yeah, charming, but evil as. And for the first time, there was nothing I wanted him to win with because he's just being so awful.
Mm. It was insane, really. And Lou Morgan here has done an incredible job. So she is going to no doubt write more for Big Finish, and she is a name I'll be very excited by when I see in the future. In terms of The Orphan, which was the episode that Sarah Sutton appeared in, I've got to say that after hearing A Quiet Night In and the emotional depths to which Katie Manning took me, I was a little bit underwhelmed by particularly Sarah Sutton or Nyssa's reaction to finding out that the Master was the Master in her story, because, you know, inevitably it's going to get to the point where, oh, Nyssa's going to realise it's the Master. It just didn't quite have the same impact. I don't know.
Did you leave much of a gap between listening to the two, or did you go straight from one set to the next one?
Straight from one to the next, virtually.
Yeah, I actually left a gap. I was emotionally raw.
Mm.
At the end of A Quiet Night In, so I actually gave it a bit of a gap. I think had I gone straight on, it wouldn't have had the same impact, because it's a similar emotion. I mean, it's the Master being Master manipulative, and I think it would have lost some of its power. But can I say those fun? Because she doesn't work out who he is till much later in the story. If you actually go back and just listen to those scenes, the final scenes where she starts to work out who he is and what's going on and how she's been manipulated up to that point, it really is very powerful as well. So I think you'd be surprised. I mean, Nyssa has a naivety to her, which is different to what Joe has. Joe's older. I guess they're both older. Joe's got a worldliness to her, though, that Nyssa still hasn't got. Nyssa is still pie in the sky. Everything's going to work out okay. You know, she's come here to this station to try and deal with the virus. So she's, you know, the expert being called in. Everyone around her has basically died, but she's still positive Nyssa, because that's how Nyssa is always. She's always positive, always making the best of the situation. You know, admitting she's now running a whole medical wing by herself, she's utterly exhausted, but she still sees the best in people and the best in situations. So because Nyssa has a different approach to start with, the fall at the end is in some ways more savage, but it's much quicker. Whereas Joe, you're seeing being tormented from the beginning, and she's understanding, well, she's not understanding the torment that's happening to her. Whereas Nyssa is naively believing what's going on till the very end, at what point she breaks. So I think it's a different breaking point. Nyssa breaks at the very end, whereas Joe's being broken throughout.
Right. I think one of the other things too about the two different characters was that I was in no doubt as to where I was in Joe's chronology, whereas I was struggling a little bit to work out where Nyssa was in her chronology and what she was doing, where she was, how it tied in with her teaming up with the Fifth Doctor and Tegan and Turlough as an older character, because she's obviously older on the cover. So how did that all tie in? So I was a bit lost as far as the chronology goes, but apart from that, that doesn't really matter at the end of the day. The story was still good. It was just a little niggling thing that was in the back of my head the whole time. Some of the chronologies in Big Finish are quite expansive, and I have a tendency to forget how it all works out or how it all begins in the first place. But absolutely, this...
I love how Big Finish can take something small from the TV series and reshape it totally. So for me, in The Quiet Night In, in terms of, we know that Jo Grant got her job through her uncle into UNIT.
Yeah.
And there's just this beautiful twist, this box set, which I just made me smile and think, how clever was that? And when you look at the new series that will run, in terms of what they did with the whole Timeless Child thing, where they're trying, a scene in the brain of Morbius that they're trying to explain why these faces that we don't know appear on screens, and we'll have an entire season, an entire rewrite of the Doctor's history to try and explain away what happened in a 30-second scene in 1970s. And to me, my way of thinking, that didn't work. Whereas here we have a throwaway scene with Joe's uncle and suddenly takes a whole new shape about what was actually happening back when Joe first entered and met the Doctor.
And this is a gazillion times more satisfying than the time as children, I can tell you.
Yeah, that's true.
It actually makes sense.
And it makes sense, and it made me smile, and it doesn't change the Doctor's history in any bit, but makes you enjoy all the more the TV show. It was so cleverly done.
It doesn't change Joe's history either, does, really.
No, but it gives you a new insight into the character and what was happening back then, and you can review the whole thing differently. Lou Morgan, absolutely genius. What is it about English women that they can write such macabre, monstrous stuff, though? You know, you look at all the English writers like Agatha Christie and Dorothy L. Sayers, and English women writing the most macabre, murderous things. They've got a special talent that I don't think anyone in the world has. On you, English, on you women from the UK, keep your murderous ways up.
Sorry to keep you waiting.
Not at all.
Barely a moment to myself. Have you ordered?
From Big Finish Productions, The War Master, Killing Time.
Perhaps the time has come for you to head back to Gallifrey and admit defeat.
Defeat? The streets boil with panic. They whisper the Empress has gone mad. I'm needed here more than ever.
They think that the Empire is falling. It is not. It will continue. And so will I.
We need to move now. If she's to be overthrown, we need to strike.
No.
No.
It is over. She's won.
Are you giving up?
I just need to go and pick up a few things.
That's not possible. You can't be. You're him. The master.
In the flesh.
You took everything from me. Now it's my turn to take it from you.
Why have you come back?
You once told me the truths come out when it's most convenient. Well, it's now most convenient. For me.
Big Finish. We love stories.
Final word for the last couple of months' worth of releases. We haven't talked about them all, but just a select few. And we were going to talk for maybe half an hour, 45 minutes. And I think we've gone way over that, Philip.
Oh, I'm sorry, everyone. Exceptional. I was concerned when the monthly releases were going to end. I was thinking, how is Big Finish going to fill it? And will it be satisfying? Well, I think the last couple of months we've seen, they've managed to be more than satisfying. I'm exhausted. I mean, trying to get through all the output is amazing. And I understand there'll be people out there who can't afford and haven't got the time to get everything at this stage. So, yeah, hopefully in terms of what we've talked about today.
Just pick one or two things that appeal. And go for it. You won't regret it. Don't worry about being a completist. You don't have to be a completist.
Yeah, and in a couple of years' time, there's bound to be some great sale.
Yeah, it'll be on special. You can catch up. Mm. Yeah. So I think we might leave our episode there. We won't do any recommendations today. You've probably come all prepared for a recommendation, haven't you?
I think we've done recommendations the whole time through, haven't we, Dwayne?
I knew that's what you would say. If I said, let's do some recommendations, that's what you would have said, Philip. I knew that. So I thought I'd let that one go.
I'm predictable.
But next week, we've got a very exciting episode coming up with Sally Navette. Lovely to be able to chat with her. Such a lovely lady. And really looking forward to what's to come. We've got the Clone Masters for Blake 7 coming out in September. So that's really good. Couple of box sets and a couple of audio books that are related to the Clone Masters, at least one anyway that's related to the Clone Masters. So, yeah, that's going to be fantastic. We'll finally find out what the two Travises is all about.
Yes, I've got a clue. I think I've worked it out.
There was a hint. If you listen to the trailer, you get sort of a... I just can't wrap it around my brain, but it's sort of, there's a clue in there.
Yeah, I think there is. I think so. And also, if you look at the visuals too, there's a bit of a clue there too.
Right. Cool. All right, we've got that to look forward to. Thank you very much, Philip. And thank you, all of you. We'll catch you next time. This has been The Sirens of Audio, episode 72, with Philip Edney and Dwayne Bunny. Theme music by the Jackpot Golden Boys and Mr. DJR. Keep up to date at sirensofaudio.com and remember to like, share, subscribe, comment, and review.